This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the book on BFM 89.9.
At times like these, Amma misses Dominique, who long ago absconded to America. They should be sharing her breakthrough career moment together. They met in the 80s at an audition for a feature film set in a women's prison. What else? Both were disillusioned at being put up for parts such as a slave, servant, prostitute, nanny, or crim, and still not getting the job. They railed against their lot in a grotty Soho caf, long before Soho became a trendy gay colony.
Hello and welcome to Buy the Book with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and as always, fellow woman, I think is appropriate for this one, Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
And this is our monthly book club, and joining us as always is a third book lover on our show. And today we have former BFMer and writer Sumitra Selvaraj. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Sumitra, you landed on our discussion because we had been wanting to talk about last year's Booker Prize winner Bernardine Evaristo, Girl, Woman, Other. Mm. And then you WhatsApped me out of nowhere going, have you read the book? And so that's how you're here. But I think the other reason that Lynn and I had planned this show was because the Booker Prizes were supposed to be announced this month, but right, they've since been postponed as we spoke on our previous show. But we decided that it's worth talking about anyway.
Since it's coming out soon enough.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And Girl, Woman, Other is both a simple and difficult book to describe. It is essentially the story of 12 different women, yes, that kind of all intertwine with each other.
Mm-hmm. And not all of whom identify as women.
Yes, that's true. Yes. And they're all British. They're all British women of varying backgrounds. Most of them are of African descent. And I'll let you take it away, Lynn.
Well, okay. So I think the idea of it being being interlocking lives is an important one because each chapter sort of tells an individual's story and to varying degrees. In some cases, it starts from birth and it goes all the way up to, I don't know, their 50s, their 80s. In other cases, it's a snapshot of a particular moment in time of somebody preparing for the first night of their play, of someone else who is going through a deeply traumatic relationship. So there are these varying things. And I think that it is worth saying that at the beginning, you do wonder how it's all going to tie together because they are very disparate stories. And also that the form of the novel is quite distinct and quite unique unto itself.
What does she call it? Future fiction? Something fiction, she calls
it. Well, I initially thought it was like a verse novel.
Which she has written in the past.
She has, yes. but it's not, is it? Because there are, I think fusion fiction actually works really well.
That's what she calls it. And you get that sense of a melding of different styles. It is very much prose, the style of writing. Mm. But then it's also stream of consciousness. And it's also long, breathless sentences that allows you to look into this character's head, but then also kind of observe them from a third party point of view. And you fall into these characters really, really quickly. I became invested so quickly in each and every one of these people. Mm.
Did you miss them when the chapter ended? Sometimes I missed them, because it's quite brief. And so it is in whole, a book that you can read and breeze through quite quickly. Mm. And so I think when certain chapters end and you realize, hold on, is this the last time that I'm going to be seeing or that I'm going to be occupying the mind and space of this person? And then I miss them, even when we move on, especially sometimes when we move to somebody wholly separate.
Right. Read and breeze through quickly is not what we usually say about Booker winner.
I was just thinking that. And I think that's really to its credit. I'm generally very wary of asking someone to join us for a book club discussion for any Booker nominee or winner, just because I feel like I might be putting them through a slog.
I still haven't recovered from Lincoln and the Bardo. It's been years.
I love Lincoln and the Bardo. So I'm just going to say that I really did enjoy that. But this book, and it's interesting that it won with the Testaments, which we don't have to talk about much at all. We've done that already. But both books are immensely readable and somewhat populist. I mean, they're very easy to access. They're not exactly... We're talking about the form, and it is experimental. It is different, but it's not difficult to tap into, perhaps because the language... So in contrast to the form, the language is actually very simple.
Mm. And I wonder whether that's because it is stream of consciousness because you are actually tapping into every character's innermost thoughts. And it's presented in kind of like the way you and I would speak in a conversation, in bits and pieces. Sometimes you don't realize when dialogues are starting and when they're stopping. Lynn, you mentioned something really interesting earlier about how, you know, you see all these different women. I realized, and then I looked it up to corroborate this, every character that you meet in here, you meet them the age, of course, at the point the book is, but you also see them all the way from childhood.
Every single character. There's always a sort of either a flashback or a description of what they were as children. Yes, it's a whole life. And I think that's what makes the way she writes so impressive, because when I first looked at the table of contents and I saw the different chapters and I looked at the size of the book and I was just like, is she really going to be able to cover 12 lives? And actually, it's not just 12 lives. There are other lives too.
Right.
And she really does. Even the supplementary characters that you only get a couple of pages of, she somehow manages to write full histories for all of them in a way that, as you said, Lynn, you feel like you've spent enough time with them that you want more of them.
Actually, what I really love sometimes is being able to see how other characters view view certain figures within the story. Because you, of course, when you are in the chapter that is named for that person, Amma Shirley, you know, you get to understand why it is that they think the way they do, the different hurts, the different things that motivate why they behave a certain way. But then when you flash to another character who's just viewing them across the room or who is sometimes avoiding them from across the room, you get to understand a bit more about how they're viewed and the disparity, I think, between how they think of themselves and how others think of them makes for a really fascinating reading experience.
That's exactly the kind of point that was made by one of the characters. I think, was it Shirley who said something about how you kind of... It's odd how people perceive you and then you learn about how they actually perceive you.
Yeah. I think that is actually something that happens both on micro levels, something as simple as two women in a bar who have a mutual friend, but also on macro levels where you first might get to know a character through one person and then suddenly you realize, oh, the next chapter is that character. Mm. And now you realize how something that seemed a particular way now reads completely differently. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's horrific. Sometimes it's just, oh my God, this is what people really are like. And the sum of all of that, I think, is that you realize everyone can actually be really great and warm and empathetic in many ways, but also quite awful in other ways. It's a greatly humanizing book.
Intersectionality at its best.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And that's a word that I think always sounds so academic, but this book does it in such a human way.
Mm. While also calling it out, which I really enjoy. Yes. Because the book, and we've mentioned that there are 12 characters, and there are 12 characters of varying levels of, how to put it, engagement with the theories that the book itself explores. Mm-hmm. So these ideas of feminism, intersectionality,
motherhood.
You know, motherhood, you know, I think even transgender or transsexual...
Sexuality.
There are all these... They all engage with it on varying levels. Some they don't want to, some they're learning. And so I think it's interesting in that because you get to see and maybe also empathize with, in a time where internet comments, right, are what they are, in a time where conversations are so touchy in some ways, I think it's good to be able to occupy and see someone going, I don't have a problem with gay people. I just don't like watching it, you know, and being able to sit with that character. And you don't have to like it or dislike it, or you can judge it all you want. The experience of reading the book, I think, is very personal.
Yeah. I think we've talked a lot without actually talking about what the story is. And I think that's because it is quite difficult to capture what the story is. Mm. The loose frame that this book is kind of set around is a theatre producer in a theatre, rather a theatre maker in London, who's of African descent.
Who used to be anti-establishment.
That's right. And now has kind of, he's doing her first play at the National Theatre, so very establishment. And she's bringing a Black feminist story to stage. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of the frame. And I think every character that we then encounter is either coming to watch the play or is related to someone who's watching the play or has some sort of connection to this story. Mm-hmm. So that's really the basis on which we start. And I think that's really interesting because you think that it's going to be the story of Amma Bonsu, who's the playwright. And then you realize it really isn't. It's about so much more.
Mm. So I read that, Amma's story is very much Bernadine's story. She was a theatre maker in her time as well. She was a quite a radical feminist, still is. And I read a really interesting interview with her where she said that the characters, the 12 characters, were born of each other. So Amma is the main character, based upon herself, the easiest one to write. And then she sat back and she thought, what does Amma want? Amma wants a daughter. And then she put Yaz in. And then what does Yaz want? Yaz wants a cool godparent. And then comes Dominique. Yeah. And that's how the story, the characters got built. And I thought it was fascinating.
That makes a lot of sense, especially in terms of how the characters speak to one another. Yes. Because there is a very familiar and familial quality to mm-hmm. the way that the characters speak and interact. And again, like and dislike and love and hate one mm-hmm. another. And those are very deep-seated things. I think we're going to get a little bit more into the issue of language and all that other stuff. So I'll save some thoughts for later on.
Well, that's perfect timing because we do need to take a break. But we are discussing the 2019 Booker Prize winner, Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. Have you read it? Did you enjoy it? Or if you haven't, do you intend to? Let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
First week, she counted on one hand the number of brown-skinned people in her college and none as dark as her. In the baronial dining hall, she could barely look up from her plates of revolting Stone Age food, let alone converse with anyone. She overheard loud reminiscences about the dorms and drugs of boarding school, Christmas holidays in Goa, the Bahamas, gap years spent climbing Machu Picchu or building a school for the poor in Kenya, about haring down the M4 for weekends in London, house parties in the countryside, long weekenders in Paris, Copenhagen, Prague, Dublin or Vilnius. Where was that even? Most students weren't like that, but the really posh ones were the loudest and the most confident, and they were the only voices she heard. They made her feel crushed, worthless, and a nobody, without saying a word to her, without even noticing her.
Welcome back to Buy the Book with me, Sharmila, and Lynn. And joining us today, Sumitra Selvaraj, because we are talking about, and frankly, geeking out over Bernadine Evaristo's Girl, Woman, Other. The book was last year's Booker Prize winner, along with Margaret Atwood's The Testaments.
Also shortlisted for the Women's Prize this year, but it did not win.
Yes. Mm. And if you tune into the first half of the show, you kind of get the lay of the land of what the book is. I wanted to dive a little bit more into the way it was written because for me, it took a while to get used to the style, the lack of capitalization, the sentences,
lack of punctuation,
the sentences running into each other. I think because for the first couple of chapters, I was wondering why. I'm often very leery of books that decide to do something experimental just because, and I'm always very suspicious that they're just trying to be cool. But I think over time, I actually realized that the way she was writing, it actually mimics the characters, the way they might be inside or the way they might speak. Do you think this novel would have felt the same if it was written in a quote-unquote regular novel way?
I think it would have read and I think it would have felt very differently. This book, for me, is a book that you feel. Mm. You slide into the plot so... It's not even a plot, is it? You kind of feel like you're a fly on the wall of the lives of these women and these people who are part of this book. And many a time when I was going through pages and chapters and paragraphs, I had no idea how far into the book I was getting. And I don't know whether... I don't know if I would have kind of bound myself as tightly to the book if it didn't flow the way it does.
Yeah, I think flow is such an important word here. Also because you mentioned that different different chapters, different characters, the language shifts. So yes. The style doesn't shift, the idea of the sentences running together. Mm-hmm. But some chapters are more conventional than others. Yes. There are some who are, I think you are entering a more orderly mind, yes. Some instances. And so you immediately get to feel that. I think another thing that the book really gets to play with in the same way that poetry does is the idea of pacing. Because she is such a master at controlling the pacing of the sentences, which is why I think you end up being so absorbed or sliding into the book, because at times you're reading, you don't recognize how long you've been reading one sentence.
Yep.
Or for that, you notice when it stops in weird ways. and that also is usually a moment, it's like when it's a mic drop, when she utilizes it that way. So I think, I understand where you're coming from. I get it. I think that a lifetime of reading Ponzi, try hard short stories will do that to you. But in this case, style is really important.
Oh, no, totally. I'm totally sold. I think it takes a while sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I completely get why this was the natural choice for it. Were there characters that stood out for you more than others? Because I felt like as I was reading the book, I liked some people more than others, forget some people, But once I was done, I almost felt like it didn't matter. Yes. That it didn't matter that some didn't stand out as much as the others.
I loved Hattie. Hattie's a favorite, I think.
Oh, Hattie, yeah.
I think Hattie's an easy favorite. Yeah.
I also really liked Bumi, though.
Yes.
There's something about her spark, even when she was a part of someone else's story first. So you don't hear of Bumi first. You hear of her through her daughter's eyes. Or you read of her. I keep saying hear like someone narrated it to me. I loved Bumi even as a mom. And then when you actually get to read about Bumi, I loved her even more.
These are not characters I liked, but these were stories that after I read them, I had to take a short break because I was like, what just happened? Mm. And that is the pairing of Shirley and Winsome.
I know. I knew that was coming.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Oh, wow.
we can't spoil it.
We shouldn't.
Yeah.
But ooh, and I think also because that is a way for two, that's an example of a relationship between two women who are family members, right? Like who are close family members, neither of whom are anything like, or rather one of whom knows the other too well and the other of whom knows the other not at all.
Yeah. Perception.
Yes, exactly. And so you get to see that play out. I don't like either of them, really, but I found them deeply memorable.
So I think the thing is that sometimes the characters are not memorable, but the relationships they form with different people really are. For instance, Dominic is not a character that I particularly liked, but she goes through a very difficult journey because she ends up in a relationship that is then abusive in many ways.
And that's horrifying to read.
Right. Yep. And it also flips the idea of gender when it comes
Absolutely.
To abusive relationships. Again, the story is more interesting than Dominic herself. But the relationship between Dominic and Amma, for instance, is something that really holds you through the whole book. And similarly, I think Shirley is one of those characters that in herself is maybe not very interesting.
Actually, explicitly, all the characters
they all
find
talk
her
about
very
how,
dull.
Yeah, but then the links that she forms with the women around her, for better or worse, the question of why she and Amma have been friends despite being so different, it feels so real because there are some friends like that.
And also the way Bernadine Evaristo handles the way especially women are unkind and nasty to each other is such a deft touch because it's true. Women betray each other and women are nasty to each other. But not in an exaggerated, dramatic way, just in the quiet, everyday ways in which we let down people that we love.
So that's something that I was thinking about because I don't feel as if as a writer she passes judgment.
No.
And that's crucial because there are a lot of moments where you think, what did you just do? And then the chapter ends and you're like, oh, okay, fine.
Come back.
Exactly. And then you maybe don't even get to see. If you're expecting resolution for every hurt, for every wrongdoing, that doesn't happen. Sometimes the hurts happen, they cause scarring, and then people behave differently thenceforth. But there is no resolution. There is no moment of, I forgive you, mother. Mm-hmm. There's none of that. And so I love the fact that as a writer, she's unafraid to plumb those depths of, you know, women being nasty to one another, women having unkind thoughts, saying unkind words, without necessarily passing judgment, which allows you then to not necessarily pass judgment also.
There was a just one or two sentences. I think this was when Penelope's marriage fell apart, and then she found out that a friend of hers also had a marriage that fell apart. I think there was a line in there about how Penelope was glad.
Because now she had a divorced friend.
Correct.
She had company.
Yes.
But it's such a real emotion, isn't it? I think that there are many people who feel this. And that sense of not judging, and you mentioned this slightly earlier as well, Lynn, that extends to, I think, how we interact or react to these pressing issues, quote unquote, of our time as well. I once remember reading somewhere about how all of us are far along on certain important issues like racism, sexism, and so on, and some of us are not.
Yes.
And how sometimes we just have to wait for people to move along at their own pace. And that's something I really felt in this book. She addresses people of different ages, different backgrounds, different exposure, different education level on things like homophobia, on things like race relations, on gender issues, but without judgment, because you can often see why someone reacts that way. And I think that's actually really important at a time when so many of us lack empathy when we have these discussions.
I'm actually amazed by the breadth of issues that the book covers.
Naturally, too.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. In a voice or in multiple diverse voices that feel very much like the snippets of conversations that we might have had with each other or that we might have had with ourselves in reading articles. That's how effortless the treatment of, and really, really, let's face it, hard issues to discuss.
Just in closing, I think we haven't touched on the fact that, so Bernardine Evaristo is, as a writer, I think is one who in the past has also been involved with ideas of the diaspora, the African diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
It has informed her other writings, and it's something that permeates through Girl, Woman, Other as well, this idea of connectedness, of never truly knowing how connected you may or may not be, and also being able to trace some of the historical chapters are so beautifully done. And and we just haven't mentioned that.
No, and I think that's actually quite important because it's not just a story of women of today. It's a story of a community of women all linked by stories of migration and travel and change over generations. And also how something that might seem difficult or new to you now may actually not be so when you look back at the line of people that have come before you.
Mm.
So apparently we only liked it a bit.
Just a bit. I mean, if you have nothing else to do, no. We have been talking about Girl, Woman, Other, and that's by Bernardine Evaristo, who was last year's Booker Prize winner. And we decided to do that for this month's book club as part of our prelude to the Booker Prize being announced next month. If you've read it, if you, you know, make a practice of reading these Booker winners, let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. And that brings us to footnotes. And Sumitra has decided to kindly stick around because, well, we don't get many guests these days.
This is true.
But before the, you know, for the main section of the show, we were talking about Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. And one of the things that we repeatedly mentioned is the unconventional writing style or structure of the novel. Mm. And we thought that it would be nice to cap off that discussion with other books that sort of do things that you don't expect or things that don't traditionally stick to what a novel can be.
Mm.
And Lynn, maybe you can get us started.
New York was the nowhere he had built around himself, and he realized that he had no intention of ever leaving it again. In the past, Quinn had been more ambitious. As a young man, he had published several books of poetry, had written plays, critical essays, and had worked on a number of long translations. But quite abruptly, he had given up all that. A part of him had died, he told his friends, and he did not want it coming back to haunt him.
Okay. I'm going to be talking about Paul Auster, and most specifically, I'm going to be talking about the New York trilogy, which I think is often held up as, I'm going to be just like vomiting a bunch of keywords and let's see what sticks, right? Because it's postmodern. It has all these questions of identity and structure and what's the word? Existentialism. Mm. And it is a book that explores all those things. It was written in 1985. In many ways, it is the book that made Paul Auster's name, I think, that has established him as a certain type of critical... Well, you either love him or hate him.
Darling.
Darling-ish. Yeah, right? Critical darling, critical punching bag. Oftentimes for the same reason, because his works are somehow both very clear and very opaque. And I think the New York trilogy is an example of that, because it is a series of interconnecting stories, all of which kind of play on the idea of... it starts with a wrong number, a call to a wrong number, and it spirals out from that into... Am I even real? Is this real? What am I investigating? And each story in its own way deals with obsession and deals with these very questions of what am I? And I'm just looking at this article that I pulled up, and it's an interview with Paul Auster that you can find on Lit Hub. And he basically says he doesn't know if the New York trilogy is very good, and that he hopes that someday someday people will stop reading it as in the postmodern way that we always have. He describes it as the work of a young writer. And I would say that I read it as a young reader, and looking back on it now, it does exactly that. Because while it's wildly experimental, it plays with format and convention and style. It is also a book that is very concerned with itself. It's very self-conscious in a way that I think the Bernardine Evaristo is not. And for that reason, it has aged in a certain light. I mentioned 1985 for a reason. But if you're talking about experimental, when I first read it, it blew my mind. So, yeah.
I've never read Paul Auster. And part of the reason is because I attempted to read one of the New York trilogies. I can't even remember which one. And I couldn't get beyond the style. It was just it was just too much. And again, I mentioned earlier how I'm usually averse to writers doing things.
Paul Auster is not really for you then.
But I think any conversation about non-traditional novel formats, his name is likely to come up.
I've realized that my reading tastes are terribly conventional. I can't think of a single book that I would have... I suppose the granddaddy of them all is Ulysses. James Joyce's Ulysses. And he wrote it with the specific purpose of messing with readers' minds, right? But I suppose... if I were to think of something a little bit more contemporary, and perhaps her name is jumping into my mind because of Bernardine Evaristo, but Zadie Smith, who is also a Black British woman of colour writer, she wrote N.W.
Fat sun stalls by the phone masts. Anti-climb paint turns sulphurous on school gates and lampposts. In Willesden, people go barefoot. The streets turn European. There's a mania for eating outside. She keeps to the shade. Red-headed. She hears on the radio, I am the sole author of the only dictionary that defines me. A good line. Write it out on the back of a magazine. In a hammock. In the garden of a basement flat. Fenced in on all sides.
And if you remember, N.W. told that the stories of a few different women in North West London. But unlike Bernardine, where the style and the kind of voice doesn't change too much from character to character, in N.W. it swings wildly. It's almost like you're reading a different book when you jump from character to character. And that took a little bit of getting used to for me, but I'm a Zadie Smith fan anyway.
I found N.W. an incredibly difficult read. I love it, but it has a lot of tragedy and violence at its heart. And I found that very difficult to sit with. And I think part of the reason why it's difficult to sit with is the style.
No, and I think it, in a weird way, actually, I remember thinking of Zadie Smith when I read the synopsis for Bernardine Evaristo before, for Girl, Woman, Other, rather, before I read the book. And I realized that the main difference is... but Bernardine writes about these women's even incredibly difficult stories with a lightness of spirit in some ways that N.W. is not. N.W. is incredibly
heavy.
And but I get what you mean in terms of that. The changing of the voice does that a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to move from, I think, N.W. Zadie Smith. If I could think of an exact opposite, it's probably Fight Club by Chuck Palahniuk. And that was the book that first came to mind when I thought of sort of these unconventional writing formats. It was also probably my earliest introduction to a book that did that.
Tyler gets me a job as a waiter. After that, Tyler's pushing a gun in my mouth and saying, "The first step to eternal life is you have to die." For a long time, though, Tyler and I were best friends. People are always asking, did I know about Tyler Durden? The barrel of the gun pressed against the back of my throat, Tyler says, "We really won't die." With my tongue, I can feel the silencer holes we drilled into the barrel of the gun.
And if you've watched the film, you might actually, weirdly enough, the film is actually a lot more coherent than the book is. The book is
You're just written, saying quite a
I
bit.
I know. And that's not to say the book is not great. I love the book Fight Club. But, you know, in the book, if you only ever read the book, you're not actually sure what's going on. You're not, is it long enough that I can spoil Fight Club by now?
I would think
I
so.
Think, yeah. So in the movie, by the end, it's clear you're talking about one person with multiple personalities. In the book, it's actually really not clear. You have the narrator, and it's very stream of consciousness, and it kind of jumps from incident to incident and person to person. And by the end, there's actually no real resolution, but there's so much angst and there's so much internal monologuing. It's a great read, and I actually think it's even more relevant now than in the 90s when it was first written, especially when it comes to men feeling disenfranchised and unheard and all of that. But yeah, definitely a format that takes some getting used to and a lot of investment and patience.
What a pairing, Girl, Woman, Other, and the Fight Club side by side.
You know, I will just say that even as writers, they're wildly different in terms of their concerns, right? Like, because Chuck Palahniuk, generally speaking, does have this preoccupation with exactly that disenfranchisement, a certain level of fury and anger, and that's what powers a lot of his stories. I love his writing, but he also generally experiments with formats. Actually, from book to book, you do see that quite often.
I feel like the one thing that this conversation has shown me is the fact that the breaker format really lets you get into the heads of characters or the way people speak or the internal aspect of people in a way that the traditional novel format sometimes cannot.
When it's done well.
When it's done well and not done because it's the cool thing to do.
I know. And I've got to admit, I finished reading this book and I went back and I looked at some of my writing and I thought, how boring you are. How tiresomely boring
time
you are.
Time to write one sentence that never ends for 5 pages.
Dux Newbery.
Yes. If nothing else, you might get shortlisted for an award. Well, on that note, we are just about running out of time, but we've been talking about unconventional novel formats or fiction formats. If you'd like to tell us the ones that you enjoyed or didn't quite enjoy, do you like this style at all? You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.